Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to What's in Your Glass. As you know, I'm the host, Armando Anthony. Let's welcome today's guest.
You know him as one of the most iconic names in the fashion world. Please welcome to the show the multi-talented John Varvatos.
Cheers, Mello. Good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks for being on.
Big fan.
Likewise, man. You know, I'm a fan. I'm a fan of your work as well. So mutual feelings. Let's talk about that tequila that you're actually drinking right now. The Villa One. Let's talk about that. So this tequila is your new venture with Nick Jonas. First of all, what is your friendship like with Nick? And how do you meet? And what is this collaboration like?
Yeah, interesting friendship with Nick. It's a special friendship too. But we met, I guess, about 7 years ago at a dinner in New York that was hosted by Roc Nation. And they were bringing together some people, creatives, people in the sports world, but probably 20 people over dinner just to get together and brainstorm. And Nick and I ended up talking right out of the box. I knew his brother Joe, and we ended up sitting next to each other in dinner, and we never really socialized with anybody else the rest of the night. We got into these conversations about family and music and fashion and life in general. And, you know, Nick's almost half my age. And it was just an instant connection. It had nothing to do about age or anything. We just connected on so many levels that over the upcoming weeks and months and that, we started spending more time together. And he called me, a few days after that and said, I'm in the studio working on some new music. I'd love to have you come by and listen to it and give me your thoughts, because I also have a record label. He wanted he liked my ear from stuff that we had talked about. And that night that we first met, though, at that dinner, we drank. It was an evening of drinking tequila and getting to know each other. When I got to the studio, he had a bottle of tequila on the console in the middle of the studio when I walked in at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm like, oh no, here we go again. And that really became the beginning of our friendship. Was, you know, talking about all different things in life, but over a glass or a bottle of tequila. And the one thing we both shared with it was not only the passion for tequila, but in a celebratory way, how tequila is something like champagne in a way, like you want to share it with good friends and family and enjoy life like that as well. So we spent a number of, days together over the upcoming months when he was in New York or I was in LA. And then we talked about doing a bit of a fashion collaboration, a little capsule. And so we worked on that. And while we were working on that, of course, we were drinking more tequila. And we put that out and it was super successful. We did a couple of fragrances, actually, that were very, very successful and won kind of International Fragrance of the Year awards, which is kind of a big thing. And while we were doing that, one day I actually was traveling. Nick called me and said, we should really be doing tequila. You know, we love tequila. We're passionate about it. Nick's a type 1 diabetic. So for him, it's the cleanest, purest drink as well. And it's also, if you can say any spirits are healthy, it's the healthiest of all spirits. For sure, that's totally truthful. So we started the whole thought process on what that would be. Why? First of all, why we would do a tequila. And we said the only way we should do one is that if it's not that we're just going to, someone's going to use our name, but it's really all about the juice. The liquid is the most important thing because that's the thing that we all come back to and that you enjoy. We can be there to help it, but let's really, if we could do something that's best in class, kind of things like things that you get involved with, you only want to do things that are really best in class. And so he had a pre-existing relationship. I don't even know what that means exactly, but with Stoli Group. And we had a meeting with them and we had this whole story about what we were thinking about doing. And they loved the whole concept. They loved that we weren't considering another celebrity spirit, that we were really considering it a best-in-class product, that we would use whatever celebrity that we have to help it. But in the end, it was really all about having the best product out there for, you know, for the price value, let's say. And how could we create something that was competitive with tequilas that were two or three times the price of ours as well. So that was the beginning of it. I don't know if you want me to keep going there, but.
No, yeah, because my next question was going to be like, what was the story behind it? But you know, what made you want to launch a tequila? And what was the story actually behind Billy One?
Yeah, so you know, wanting to do a tequila was really being so passionate. I've been drinking tequila for almost half my life. When I started, they were pretty shitty tequilas. It was also I couldn't afford them, but there was also before the days of what we call ultra premium tequila. That really started in the early 2000s. And today, some of those brands wouldn't even be considered ultra premium because there's such high quality tequilas out there. And Nick also, since he began drinking at the age of drinking age, was drinking tequila as well. So, you know, it was a real passion that we shared. And then when we had this connection with the Stoli Group, they invited us down. They had just bought a 70-year-old distillery in Jalisco, Mexico, which is in the region of tequila. And they wanted us to come and visit the distillery. So on the way down, kind of a funny story, but we got to the airport and Nick, it was flying with one of Nick's private planes at the time. And his manager said, "We're not going to Guadalajara tonight. We're going to go to Cabo." I'm like, it's like completely out of the way. Like, why are we going to Cabo? And he said, because we need to do, we also had some people from Stoli. He says, because we need to do something that really, you know, brings everybody together and we really have a special moment. So we ended up going there and staying at a very special resort for 8 hours max. We were there. But during that time, over tequila, good food, you know, talking about what we thought this brand could be, how we would market it, all of that. All of us got super pumped about it. And at maybe 2:30 in the morning, before we all decided to go to bed, because we had to get up at 6 to leave for Guadalajara, Nick raised his glass and said, "To life as it should be." Mm. And what he meant by that was, again, getting back to being with people that you care about, enjoying those times together. And I said at that moment, I said, that has to be our mantra. Like, I hadn't heard that before. That's totally got to be our mantra for the brand, which it is. And where we were staying the next morning when we got up, I got up at 6 o'clock, made coffee for the crew in the kitchen, and then walked out in front. It was a beautiful day. I walked out in front of this little villa, and on the gate behind it, it said Villa One.
Oh, shit.
Because they had multiple villas. And Nick came out and I said, "Look at this." And we both kind of said, like, this is something here. It's a place that really we conceived some of the things that we were doing. It's kind of where we felt like we really kind of kicked the real start of this off. And so that was the kind of the beginning of us really looking into using the Villa One name. And we then headed down to Jalisco and we were met at the gates of the distillery by the master distiller for the distillery, who in that region, we had no idea at the time, is considered the godfather of tequila. He's been making tequila for most of his life. He's created some of the top brands out there. And they had hired him to run this distillery. His name's Arturo Fuentes. And I consider Arturo part of our, you know, it's kind of the three amigos with Nick, myself, and Arturo. And he's our secret weapon. He really is. You know, when I talk about the magics in the bottle, here's our bottle. When I talk about the magics in this bottle, it's Arturo inside this bottle as well. It's his magic that he helped us create. So
you mentioned passion early on. Like, where did the passion for tequila come from?
You know, it's kind of like you and wine, I think, too. You know, I think it encompasses so many feelings about it. It's not just, of course, it's searching for the right taste profile. And, you know, you kind of get addicted to that whole search of the newness, the different thing, something special. I will say as I got a little bit older and connected with it even more, when I would work with my trainer and he'd say, like, what did you eat last night? What did you drink? And I'd say, I had a couple glasses of tequila. He goes, okay, if you're going to drink, that's the only thing you should be drinking. And I took it as the gospel.
So what makes Villa One special? Aside from the story, aside from how you came up with it in the story, what makes it special?
Well, first of all, it's the liquid. So the liquid really is, each one has a separate, you know, taste profile. We do a silver, a reposado, and an añejo. And it's the amount of distilling that goes into it. It's Arturo and his blending of all of those. But we also have a bit of a secret weapon as well, besides Arturo, in that we own our own distillery. We own our own agave plantations, now multiple ones, which most brands don't. Most brands don't even own their distillery. They job it out to different people. So the quality control is great. But in those agave plantations, we source the agave from both the highlands and the lowlands. And the highlands are very sweet, and they add one aspect to it that you don't have to put any sugar into the product. And then the lowlands are more nutty and earthy. So the combination of the two, and as far as we know, we're one of only two brands that actually use both, and the other one's a very small one. So it is a special way of blending and distilling then. And then, you know, our reposado is like 6 to 9 months in American oak barrels, and our añejo is done 12 to 16 months in American oak barrels as well.
I really have to taste the tequila, by the way.
You just
sold me on the whole lifestyle, and the actual juice, it has to be, it's very important. Stepping away from tequila for a second and just bringing it all the way back to the beginning. Like, what was it like with growing up in Detroit? And did that have anything to do with, we'll get to that next question. What was it like growing up in Detroit?
Well, I grew up in Detroit really, you know, in the 70s, let's say, was when I was starting to grow up there. And you know what? It's an industrial town, so it wasn't a beautiful fashion town. Some people ask me how I got to fashion from there, and I grew up in a little like 800 or 900 square foot house with 7 people in it, so 5 kids and my parents with 1 little bathroom. But that's all we knew, so I didn't think it was anything out of the ordinary. When I go back now and look, I think, like, how did we ever do that? Every morning, 7 people lined up for the bathroom, you know. But the one thing I did learn there was, I didn't learn, one thing I started to really develop was passion for different things. And the first one was really music, because living in that little house, there was really nowhere to hide. You know, I could go down to the basement, but that was really about it. But I took music in a very big way, and I would put my headphones on and it transported me someplace. I was all of a sudden someplace else. I was away from my two brothers in this little room. I was away from my family, all kind of in this house. So, and Detroit was a real city of pride, even though it had been gone through a lot of issues. There was a lot of pride there as well, and a work ethic as well. And so those are the only things I knew growing up was, you know, music, pride for what you do and the work ethic, no matter what. So, you know, my work ethic started as a young teenager because it had to, because I had to work and I had to find a way to get to school and, you know, go on from there. My parents really weren't able to support me to go to college. I had to find ways on my own to do that.
So when did you start to pay attention to fashion? When did fashion come into play?
When I started to think about girls in a serious way, I really, you know, I noticed one day that I had got a sweater and I was still in junior high school, so probably ninth grade or something. And I got a great reaction from multiple girls that day. So I'm like, I need to find a way to be involved in this in a bigger way. So I started putting applications into different clothing stores that I could potentially get a discount in. So, you know, not only could I make some money, but I could get some more clothes, you know, and it really started that way. And that's a true story. It really started that way. And it continued that way through high school and even into college. I mean, I then began to develop a passion for putting clothes together, style, following other people's style, mostly musicians at the time, but really following people's style and never emulating someone, but also maybe Keith Richards' scarf or this person's boots or whatever, you know, pulling different things together and kind of create my own style, never thinking about, you know, I mean, in Detroit, we didn't really even know what a fashion designer was at that point in time. They weren't really around in America at that time.
And you had career stops both at Ralph Lauren and Calvin Klein.
Right.
Like what, right. Like, what was it like working for each? Because it's different.
Yeah, it was completely different. They're two completely different brands and completely two different personalities and DNAs behind those brands. So I started at Ralph Lauren. And it was really where I got my education. I call it Polo University because it was an amazing brand to understand everything from product design to branding because he's one of the ultimate branders out there in the world. And then when I went to Calvin to head up design at Calvin Klein, it was completely different. It was about sex and a different kind of marketing and a different kind of clothing. And I loved it. I loved that it was something different and it had a different edge to it. And it was probably more in my mindset than the kind of preppiness of Ralph Lauren. It was probably more, you know, the freedom that I had at Calvin in terms of product was probably more in my own personal taste level as well. And then I came back to Ralph Lauren in 1994, where I became head of design for all the menswear brands at Ralph Lauren Polo at that time.
What made you want to break off as your own designer?
You know, and it was at the end of 1999. I happened to be in a store that's now gone that we all know, but Barney's New York. I was walking on the store on Madison Avenue here, and a couple weeks before Christmas. And I was walking around the men's area and I felt like so many things were looking the same. And just something, a lightning bolt hit me at that point in time because I had offers over time to do my own thing and have other people back me. But at that moment, I just thought like, wow, it's absolutely the time to do something different. And I've always been having this idea for something different in the back of my mind. And I pulled the trigger immediately on it. It wasn't something that it took weeks or months or whatever to bubble up. The next morning, I started moving on that whole thought process.
Wow. That brings me to kind of another question I wanted to ask you on, you know, the timing and the vision of a lot of your work and a lot of your brands and your fashion. Like, how important it is to you that you think it is to stay true to your vision? Because a lot of people might have a vision They might be told, oh, this shit don't work. Get rid of that. Don't do that. And they might get discouraged by that. But how would you say how important it is to stay true to that vision?
You know, it's probably the most important thing because in the end, it's your brand. And people look to you for certain things. And there's very few brands that can constantly totally reinvent themselves, total reinvention. Evolution is a big thing that we all need to do. But revolution is a difficult thing in the fashion world for brands to continue to. It's a little easier today because there's so much fashion out there today and so much noise around fashion. But probably when I started in 2000, it was a little different. But being true to your DNA and to your soul of your brand is the most important thing for sure. Doesn't mean you shouldn't evolve. It doesn't mean you shouldn't push your walls out. But it's the one thing, like if you look at a company like Ralph Lauren, which is one of the biggest fashion brands in the world, maybe the biggest one as a designer, it's been him not wavering. Doesn't mean he hasn't pushed his walls up, but not wavering from that DNA. Very being true. And it's, you know, there's been times where the whole organization was, even when I rejoined in 1994, the part of the organization wanted me to push him to go a different direction because the marketplace was rumbling about different things and their business was kind of softening a little bit. And he fought it. And I have to say I learned a lot. That's why I also kind of call it Polo University, because you really learn that, you know, it's easy to listen to a lot of people, but when you have something that you own, that is your own personality and your own DNA, don't give it away to somebody else.
Keeping control of your IP, for sure. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, for sure.
when you think about fashion versus style, right? How would you define the difference between the two?
Well, fashion is for me is of the moment. It's something that kind of comes and goes. It generally doesn't have any kind of long-term life to it. But style, I look at is kind of ageless and timeless. And I don't look at style just about clothes. I look at how people carry themselves, not just in their clothes, but what they feel like when they walk into the room or they leave the room, what they leave you with. So style is much more encompassing. It's also about the person and not just about the clothes, where fashion is strictly about the clothes.
Yeah, the style is the swag. For sure.
Yep. Yeah, for
style,
sure.
Style is a swag. I want to talk to you about music. How has music like influenced you throughout your life? Because I know you're very big into music. You're an artist, you know, you're yourself. But how has music influenced you throughout your life?
I would say it's the biggest influence for me from a creative standpoint. I find that it's my energy force. So I can't walk into my studio or work from home or whatever I do without having music on. It's just, and the music can change. It can be a different mood in the morning, something different, or what I'm working on might be driven by that. But most importantly, I find it's a real true energy force and a huge part of who I am personally. And, you know, I could live without a lot of things in my life, but I couldn't live without music. There's no way I could live without it. It's too important. And it's important to a lot of people. But and I think it's great. It means so much. And, it led to, I don't know how many years ago now, probably 6 or 7 years ago, Universal Music approaching me about creating a label together with them, which, you know, I've now had for that period of time. And, you know, it's been an exciting thing because I've looked at it like I really want to help young artists in a world today that's kind of driven by pop music. I want to give artists that aren't necessarily pop artists an opportunity to get their music out there, because most other than pop, kind of hip hop and rap, there's really not much else out there to, like, rock and roll's not really happening today and that kind of thing. And I've got an amazing young artist right now that I'm super excited from Seattle. And he's opening up for the Rolling Stones in Detroit.
Oh, that's major.
Which is a major thing. And the other thing that's really major about it, they are the only African and American rock band that we know of that is living and breathing today that's total African American, all players in it. And they are badass motherfuckers. I mean, they really are. They are just, they are great. And they're, you know, they're just, their live show's amazing. And I'm so psyched for them. You know, it's really not about me with that. It's really, his name's Aaron Jones. And I was just talking to Aaron last night, and I wanted to just impart how proud of him I am, but the excitement coming through that phone last night for him opening for the Rolling Stones was like a kid who grew up in Seattle that really didn't have his parents. He was a child of the state. And now he's this, you know, top Billboard number one song, the longest song on Billboard number one this year for any rock music. And all of a sudden proved himself that he didn't go the way his parents went. He was really able to stay out of all the mire and all the underground stuff that consumed his parents. And he was able to make something of himself as well. So it's a great moment when you can work with somebody like that, help give them the opportunity, and they rise to the occasion. Doesn't happen very often for sure, but it's a pretty special moment.
Yeah. And to rise to the occasion of opening up for the Rolling Stones, that's in Detroit, yeah. which is music heaven out there in Detroit. So it's,
yeah, you know,
big shout out to him for that. What draw you to certain kinds of music, and kind of what made you want to expand like furtherly and creatively into, you know, the music space?
Well, you know, growing up in Detroit, as you well understand, I mean, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame may be in Cleveland, but the best music city in America was really Detroit. I mean, Motown, blues, jazz, rock and roll, gospel, everything was there, you know? And it was a cornucopia of amazing music and style and conglomeration of a lot of those things as well. So for me, it was, you know, so much of that, being exposed to so much of it and being loving all of those of that music that I just talked about. I love every one of those genres. And I love that how certain ones blended and morphed into something else. And it still remains a lot of that, because I think the fight in Detroit to somehow overcome is still going on.
Oh, for sure.
And music, you know, is a place where people can use their voice to talk about the fight, how to get out of it, you know, every tell their stories in that. And I think in today's world, with as many crazy things as we have going on, you know, music today, and I'll say that isn't pop music generally, music today, whether it's hip hop or it's rock or whatever, they're about storytelling, and they're about bringing people into that place and sharing experiences with people that other people are living or having issues or whatever it is. And so I look at that as being, again, a huge driving force for me, you know, loving the whole aspect of music. And there's also one more thing I'll say. I always loved that from a young kid, I probably thought about it more when I was in college. I found this incestuousness between music and design, that every designer wanted to be a musician and every musician wanted to be a designer.
It's similar to sports.
Exactly.
It's similar to sports.
Exactly.
All the rappers and musicians want to be athletes and vice versa.
Exactly.
So it's definitely a very big connection, a broad connection when it comes to music, sports, fashion. Bringing it all back to kind of why we're here, what's in your glass. Before we end, I just have a few quick fire questions for you to close us out. Me and the people, we just have to know kind of what's in your glass on some special occasions. It doesn't have to be labeled specifically, but what's your go-to when I would say you're on a beach vacation?
A margarita, light margarita, not with a... A light margarita, spicy margarita, that type of thing. Yeah. I feel like I'm really on vacation when I'm drinking that.
you're out at dinner at a nice restaurant.
You know, it could be anything from a glass of tequila with, you know, just a slice of orange or just on the rocks, or it could start with that and then end with a beautiful bottle of wine.
So you start with the tequila, then end with the wine.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I usually do it the other way around.
You don't want to have too much of these.
I usually do it the other way around.
No, I usually have a cocktail pre.
What you're celebrating your, your first CFDA award. What's in your glass?
Tequila, there's no doubt about it. I had a hard time waking up the next morning after that night.
Oh, of course. I can only imagine. You're celebrating your 20th anniversary of the brand.
That's interesting. For a 20th anniversary of the brand, I probably would be creating something, a drink for us at that point in time. I'm not much of a mixologist, but COVID did definitely had me
mixing.
gave me some time to play around. And so I love to celebrate that moment. I just launched a new brand called On This Day. Mm. It's a men's and women's, completely different than what I'm doing. And On This Day is about celebrating that moment. And when you think about things that, whether it's you're with somebody that you love or whatever it is, it's that type of thing. And so I love creating drinks around that moment today. Like, what is it about today that's special? Let's create something that's memorable for today.
Oh, man. I just want to say thank you, man. John, thanks so much for joining me for a glass. And just best of luck with everything you have going on right now. I want to thank you, the audience, for tuning in this week. Please follow, rate, review, as you know, What's in Your Glass on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts at. You can also check the video releases out each week on YouTube. Again, John, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Congratulations on Villa One. Congratulations on your record label. I'm sure I'll be hearing about the opening for the Rolling Stones during that concert. I'll be paying attention to that. Maybe sipping on some tequila. So, and I'll be waiting on.
You're gonna definitely get some tequila. So, such an honor to be with you. Big fan. Keep up. All the good positive vibes that you're always sending out to everybody here.
I appreciate it, John. Thank you so much.